Good morning, Scott Luton here with you on Supply Chain Now. Hey, this episode that you're about to hear is one of our Supply Chain Now classics, recorded back in 2019 or 2020. We hope you enjoy this wonderful perspective shared. And hey, we wish you and your families all the best through the holiday season. Thanks so much for being part of our mission to amplify and serve the voice of supply chain.
It's time for Supply Chain Now. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. Heard around the world, Supply Chain Now spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. And now, here are your hosts.
On today's show, we're continuing a brand new series that we're really excited about, our Full Access series. And this is where we're focusing our spotlight on exceptional female leaders across industry. We're really excited to be featuring a special guest today. Please join me in welcoming Sherika Sanders, Senior Technical Engineer at Manor Polymers. How are you doing, Sherika?
I'm doing well. How are you, Scott?
Doing fantastic and glad you're here.
Awesome.
Really appreciate your time. We were talking about the weather earlier, and it's gorgeous there in Texas, isn't it?
It is gorgeous in Texas. I don't know how long that good weather is going to last, but we'll take it for now.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for joining us here. So, you know, before we dive into your more professional journey, Sherika, if you could tell us a little bit more about yourself, your current role, and what you do.
So, as you mentioned earlier, I am the senior technical engineer here at Manor Polymers. And what that role entails is basically product development. So if there is a new product that needs to be added to our portfolio, I manage that as well as troubleshooting at customers. So that means some travel. I'll go to customers if they're having products, problems running our products. I'll help them through that process and kind of ease things out for them, as well as something that's really not in my job description, but I kind of do on my own. And that is mentoring young girls in the McKinney, Texas community and helping them to understand what it looks like to pursue a STEM career. And my company really supports this because it's a family-oriented community company where we actually pay for counselors at a local elementary school. And so our CEO is really into making sure that we basically fill the pipeline with folks from Texas and McKinney.
Wow, I love that. I love industries and companies and organizations that it's not all about lip service, giving back. They're taking action. They're investing. The next generation, really. So, and I know you understand you've got a lot of passion around that, and we're going to pick your brain on that. So looking forward to that. Let's, as we continue this interview, let's move back in time a little bit. Tell us, Sherika, where you grew up and what were some of your early hobbies?
So I grew up in Shreveport, Louisiana, born and raised, so I'm a Southern girl through and through. And some of my hobbies, I guess early on, I would say, are Girl Scouting. So I participated in Girl Scouts quite a bit growing up. I actually, as a college student, became a camp counselor and lifeguard. And so I kind of held on to the scouting as a hobby. And then I started to enjoy probably singing and dance a little bit in middle school and got into the show choir. And then I started cheering in high school and college. So I definitely see cheering as a sport. I know a lot of people may see it as something else. But and as you look through, you know, some of these things and the hobbies that I have, I think that's when I start to identify that I'm just a natural encourager. And so these are things that kind of lended to me being able to encourage people, you know, cheering them on at the football game or the basketball game or show choir, you know, the entertainment type of thing, encouraging people just to, you know, kind of feel good about themselves through a song or something like that. So, you know, my hobbies kind of lended more so to the gift of encouragement.
We don't have enough of that in society, I don't think. Let me ask you a quick follow-up question. So with scouting and the Girl Scouts, how fundamentally important was that to developing your leadership and your confidence?
Oh, very important. So I would definitely say earning badges and not just, I guess I would say, badges in leadership. So badges in, okay, can you take an idea and can you run with it? Can you make something of it? Can you implement a thought that you've come up with? Can you ideate? Can you come up with something that will be new and fresh, and will it make sense to other people? Can you convey a message to where it would make sense to other people? I learned that in scouting. And then becoming a lifeguard, also, I would say, through scouting, helped me to just understand and value life, you know, value people, and value and have some type of emotional intelligence. So, you know, if you're dealing with other people, you're interacting with other people, which you do quite a bit through scouting and through camps and through counseling and that type of thing, you start to see, okay, if a person's facial reaction is not quite what you thought it would be, then maybe you're not conveying your message the way you thought that you were. And so you kind of learn some of that through scouting as well. So I would definitely say it was beneficial in developing me as a leader.
Outstanding. So what were, speaking of leaders and role models, you know, what were one or two of your earliest role models that, that you really drew inspiration from, Sherika?
Oh, let me tell you. So I mean, that is a pretty easy question for me, fortunately, because my two role models are my parents, my mom and my dad. I would say that they, anything that I thought I might have been interested in, they were all on board. They were like, how can we make this happen for this child? I can think of a funny story. In elementary school, probably around the fourth grade or so, I decided I wanted to do my science project on electricity. And so my dad goes, oh, okay, well, then that means we have to go to the power plant. We have to take a tour. We have to give you a chance to ask questions and all this good stuff. And I'm like, wow. So that's typically how they were. Anything that I thought that I might have wanted to do, they were on board, they were supportive, and they really made me believe you can do anything you set your mind to. So, I mean, when I think of role models, they are top of mind, top of list for me all the way.
Now, are they back in Shreveport?
Yes, okay. They are back in Shreveport.
Fantastic. All right, so switching gears a little bit, although really one of the main themes throughout these interviews typically is about our education, whether it's informal or formal. But let's talk about the formal side of your education. Where'd you go and what'd you major in?
So for undergrad, I went to Xavier University in New Orleans,
Louisiana. Musketeers, right?
No, Go Rush.
Okay, sorry.
You're thinking Xavier up north. So they're two different schools.
Okay.
So Xavier down south is a historically black college and university. It's HBCU, number one for getting African American students into medical school. We've held that record for at least 25 years or so. And so, yes, they're still going strong, still pushing people to rise to the occasion and pushing excellence all the way.
And home of the Gold Rush, too. Is that right? The Gold Rush.
Gold right. Rush.
Historical black college. And what town is that in?
That's in New Orleans.
In New Orleans. Gotcha.
In New Orleans, in the heart of the city. Yes.
Awesome. Okay. And so I guess you went on to grad school as well.
Yes, I did. So I majored in chemistry at Xavier and then went straight into graduate school and got a PhD in chemistry as well at University of Houston.
Wow.
And then after that, formally, I would consider my postdoc as formal education as well. So I postdoc with a national lab, Sandia National Labs in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
You know, I had one class of chemistry and that I felt out of my league. I can only imagine to earn your PhD, the math, the chemistry, the STEM that you had to master, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. But it was fun. It was fun. It actually, let me tell you, it brings me back to a lot of people ask me, you know, how did you decide you wanted to be a chemist? And how I decided, it was the summer before my junior year in high school. I attended a summer camp called Young Scholars at Wiley College in Marshall, Texas. And the directors, they said, okay, you got a choice for the summer. Do you want to focus on chemistry? Do you want to focus on biology? Or do you want to focus on physics? And so I kind of chose chemistry by default. I didn't want to do biology because when I tell you I'm afraid of everything creepy crawling, I said, no, we've already taken a tour of the campus. We've already, and I've seen those rats in the lab, so I will not be choosing biology. And then physics, it just really didn't resonate with me at the time. And so I chose chemistry by default, but I fell in love with it. It kind of made life make sense to me.
I bet.
They introduced me to the periodic table, and I thought, okay, so this is what I've been thinking about all along, because these are materials that we use every day in life that come together, that interact together, and create all of the materials that we use, plastic bags or wooden chairs or, you know, materials, artificial leather that goes in your car. I mean, everything, paper towels. I mean, the list just goes on and on. You can trace all of these things back to the periodic table, and I just fell in love with it. I knew at that point, this is what I want to do.
I can tell. The passion is just it's filling my ears, which is great. Sherrick, I love that. So let's think about here's an interesting question. So if you were to give first-year college student Sherrica at Xavier Gold Rush in New Orleans, Louisiana, some advice looking back, what would that be?
I would tell myself to have more fun. I mean, for God's sakes, I am in school in New Orleans. I mean, party city, right?
That's
and by no means am I encouraging party your way through college. However, I would have told myself to relax a little bit more and to enjoy the ride, especially as a freshman. I don't tell many people this story, but the first semester of my freshman year, I had decided I was not going back. So when I went home for Christmas, I said, this is not for me. I thought this is what I wanted to do. And so I didn't even tell my parents. It's just when we were getting ready to pack the car to go back to school for the spring semester, I told my mom then. I was like, I don't think I want to go back to school. And she goes, okay, well, what's plan B? And I said, well, I haven't quite figured out plan B yet. She said, well, we're going to go back to school until you do. And so we got in the car, we went back to New Orleans, and second semester, I just kind of caught my stride. I caught my stride, and, you know, in the spirit of transparency, I met a guy. And so, you know, you kind of that kind of helps you along the way in school and all this kind of stuff. But I mean, I did professionally as well. And as far as my education, I started in chemistry too. And, you know, more of the things that I liked about chemistry, I started to see. And then I started doing research as well. I was introduced to research second semester of freshman year. And that's what kind of held on to me and, you know, helped me make it through the rest of the time that I was there. So, yeah, but I would definitely tell myself, have more fun, relax, you know, enjoy the ride and take advantage of those people that are trying to pour into you and make something of you.
And back to your parents. Your parents, it seems like what I heard you say there a little bit is they knew kind of what was best for you. And they put you in position for you to realize your path and for you to realize your passion in many ways. Right.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Without a doubt.
So let's move from college and move more into your, you know, early career stage, right? So what was your first job? And if you could give us, what was a critical lesson that you learned from that first job?
So my first job was at Dow Chemical as a senior chemist in Midland, Michigan. Let me go back a little bit.
Sure.
So during my postdoc, at Sandia National Labs, I got a chance to work on some really, really cool projects. And it was, unfortunately, after the Columbia space shuttle accident. And so one of my first projects was to try and figure out what went wrong with this space shuttle upon its reentry into the Earth's atmosphere. Why did it catch on fire? Can we prevent this from happening again? And so that was my first project. And of course, being a new scientist, I wanted to make an impact. And so that was one of the things that I delivered on. Well, I was presenting this work at a conference, and there was a recruiter there by the name of Keith Watson from the Dow Chemical Company. And he came up to me after my presentation and he goes, please tell me you don't want to work for government forever. And I go, no, actually, I'm about the end of my postdoc and I'm looking for a job. He goes, nice to meet you. I'm Keith Watson from Dow. And I go, okay. He was like, let's go have coffee. And so we had coffee. And 2 months later, I was actually starting work at Dow.
Wow.
And it was a great experience working for Dow. I was there almost 10 years before moving on to my next opportunity. But one of the things that I would say that I learned as a new scientist working for a very large chemical company was that it was very important to manage up managed down as well as managed across. So obviously most people go in thinking, okay, I need to make sure that I get along with my boss and I need to make sure that, you know, I perform well for my boss. But that's not the only thing that you must consider and that I learned in the safety of the Dow Chemical Company. It was not a bad experience at all. I had lots of good mentors and people who looked out for me and who taught me this lesson. And, you know, because there is something called performance management, and you're being compared to your peers, you have to manage them as well. And that's the whole manage across deal. And then manage down. So I learned manage down when I became a leader within the company. I had a boss as well as a mentor had me take what's called the 360 assessment. And leadership just came booming out of this 360 assessment. So she said, I'm going to take a try on you managing some folks in the lab. That's when I learned, okay, not only do I need to continue to, you know, deliver on the expectations of my senior management, as well as keep in contact with my peers that are around me, but now I have a group of people who are now looking up to me, and I need to manage down, and I need to make sure that they get the tools that they need to be successful. And so I would say that whole 10 years at Dow, that is one of the most very important lessons that I took away from that.
And what a great organization to kick off your career with, it seems. I mean, you spent 10 years there at the beginning of your career, is that right?
Yes, 10 years. I thought I was going to be a Dow kid forever. But, you know, like I said before, you meet someone.
That's right.
And, you know, that kind of takes your life on a different turn. So absolutely. I met my husband, you know, started a family and moved to North Texas.
Wow. Okay. All right. On that note, so let's talk about one of your early promotions. Let's talk about, you know, how you accomplished it and what doors it opened for you, Sherika.
So I kind of mentioned it actually in the last response. So about 2 years in, I actually transferred from the Midland, Michigan site down to the Freeport, Texas site, where I spent most of my time at Dow in Freeport, Texas. And as I mentioned, I had a very intuitive boss at the time who saw something in me that I didn't even see in myself. And she just kind of came by and said, you know, why don't you take this 360 assessment? I just want to see, you know, what other facets of you that we're not exploring that we could possibly use as a benefit to the company. And so I did. And like I said, leadership just came booming out of this assessment. And she tried me on managing the lab. Well, that went well, which led into my promotion. Now, it was a cool promotion because me being a scientist and science and research being the only thing that I had ever known, I was afraid to leave the lab. And so she created a position for me, which was 50% researcher, 50% lab leader.
Interesting.
And so I spent 50% of my time managing the folks in the lab and 50% of my time in the lab still doing product development and managing some customer accounts. And so that was my first promotion. But you asked, what doors did it open for me? It opened another world for me. It opened this world of leadership because it showed me not only can you lead, but you can lead well. And then I had a mentor tell me, which stuck with me forever. And he told me, leadership is a service. And, you know, because some people will get into leadership and they want to beat their chest and, you know, hand out orders. But that's not how, you know, we saw leadership. We saw it as, hey, you have a group of people who are depending on you to service them, to remove roadblocks, to help them be successful. And so with that mindset, it opened not that leadership door, but then other leadership doors and other leadership doors after that until I became a director of R&D.
So going back to how that role was created for you, that's great to hear. You know, I think so often, at least in my experience, a lot of organizations will kind of stick to a standardized path. And that's why, unfortunately, I think a lot of organizations lose talented people. They're not as...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they don't lean in to, you know, creating unique opportunities as often as they should be for folks that have unique talent and a knack for getting things done, a knack for leading. So creating that hybrid role for you, it sounds like, was a big part of your early career success. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. So I think that also goes into, you know, getting to know the people that you lead. Mm. So if she had not seen in me that I had some, I guess, reluctance to move into a leadership role, she wouldn't have thought to ask, okay, so what is this reluctance that I'm seeing? What is this that, you know, it's not sitting well with you? And that's when I was able to share with her that, hey, look, you know, all I know is the lab. This is all I've ever done. This is all I, you know for sure that I'm good at. And so, you know, going back to getting to know the people that you lead, then you can better be able to create these types of positions and hybrid roles for them to be able to ease into it. And it goes back to leadership being a service and leadership being, you know, a roadblock remover and a person who helps you be successful.
I love that. Leadership is a service. It's not about barking orders. It's serving others, right? All right. So fast forward a little bit here. So when did you land in your current role? And can you think of any, what the developments were that created that opportunity?
Oh, yeah. Because this was a huge transition in my life. So I mentioned that I left Dow, and it was bittersweet. Mm. It was bitter because, like I said, I thought that I was, you know, going to be with the company forever. I thought I would retire with the Dow Chemical Company. However, you know, my husband was up here in Dallas. He's been with General Motors for over 20 years. And my boss at the time, he was really cool at the beginning of our marriage, and he would let me work from Dallas a few days a week. But by the time that we decided to start a family, we needed to be in the same place. So I left Dow and I moved to the Dallas area, where I found a job at Authentix as R&D director. Well, Authentix was sold 3 years into the role, and the new leadership was not heavily R&D centric. And so myself and my team, my entire team pretty much was laid off. We were released in February of last year. And so you say, how did I land my current role and what development created that opportunity? Well, kind of the development of not having a job. And so, you know, just in the full spirit of transparency here, you know, of course, you know, I kind of freaked out. And my husband, hey, you know, calm down. We're good. And take your time and find something that you want to do. Even consider staying at home. You know, we had a 4-year-old at that time. But I was online searching one day, and I saw this job in plastics. And that's what I had done the whole time that I was in Dow. I was working in plastics and polymer science. And so this job came across my job board, and it said, hey, it's a job in McKinney, Texas, looking for a product development plastics engineer. And I go, my heart just started beating really fast. Mm. Like, oh, this is for me. This is my opportunity to go back to plastics, you know, a place where I grew up. And so I sent my resume to the HR director here at Manor Polymers at noon that day. By 2 p.m., she had called me back.
Wow.
The next day, okay, I was in for an interview, and the 2 weeks later, I started work here. And it is a very, very, like I said, family-oriented, community-centric company. So it's a really, really good fit for me.
Mm. So to our audience, we're talking with Sherika Sanders, PhD, Senior Technical Engineer at Manor Polymers. All right. So, Sherika, we won't now dive into what I know in our prep work and our pre-interview conversations is a true passion for you. And I'm looking forward to this component of the interview. So shifting from, you know, talking about your personal journey as it relates to your career and talking more about the industry, your insights, some of the areas where we all need to serve the industry better. In particular, I know that you've done a lot of work, you know, helping to move the needle as it relates to the gender gap and creating opportunities for all. So for starters, why is it really important for us to tackle the gender gap in industry?
Well, I think it's important for us to tackle the gender gap because when you have a company and when you look at corporate America, diversity is always better. And the reason I say diversity, and I mean diversity in gender, diversity in race, diversity of thought, all those things help you innovate. And every company wants to innovate. Every company wants to go to the next level. So think about it this way. If I have all the same people with all the same types of thoughts and ideas, all the same background, how can I come up with something new? I'm just going to keep reinventing the same thing over and over again.
Boring. Right. Very boring.
Boring.
Ineffective.
You know, just the same thing, ineffective all over again. And so you don't, and really at the end of the day, most companies want to make money, right?
That's right.
They want to be able to sell whatever product that they're marketing. And so in order to reach your consumer, you also need diversity of thought because there are a diversity of people in the world. It's constantly evolving. So you have a group of millennials that are now coming into the workforce, that are now able to consume and buy and have jobs and all these things. And they are very diverse. There's nothing consistent about the millennial generation that I've encountered. I come in contact with something different, a new personality, almost every single week. So, yeah, that's why I think it's important so that we can respond to the people that we're serving.
Absolutely. All right. So, and I love also how you, you know, you define diversity, because I think oftentimes the human in us, you go to immediate, whether it's race, and they stay right there in terms of their definition of diversity. But I like how you put it. It's not just race. It's not just gender. It's diversity of thought. It's across the board. There's all sorts of ways we can celebrate our differences and how they give us the ability to think and contribute differently, right?
Right. Diversity of background. I mean, different people come from different areas, and I don't think that's anything to be shied away from. I mean, I think that's, you know, an opportunity to learn, right? Because, I mean, a lot of times you talk about unconscious bias.
Sure.
So if you go to the store and you see someone who doesn't necessarily look like you, you immediately start to develop your own opinion about how that person is. And if you have that type of thought in a company coming from the same type of person, then a lot of times you'll get the same type of people that they attract to the company. That's another thing. So not only don't you get a diversity of ideas, they will tend to attract the same type of people and the people who look just like them and act just like them and think just like them.
Yep. I also like how you tied it back to innovation as well. That's really important. And it also helps make, you know, things, I think we can get more buy-in from all of the stakeholders out there when things become more tangible, more practical, and it can impact the bottom line. And I think there's been a wide variety of studies beyond the common sense reasons of why we need to provide opportunities for all. Beyond all of that, and because it's the right thing to do, there's also an economic play there. It can drive margins and innovation and stuff. So, all right.
And you speak about the economic play, and I'll throw this part in here because it's something that's near and dear to my heart as well. So you think about economics. And you think about the type of school districts that are available and the type of education that's available in different economic classes. So if I give someone a chance from a different economic realm at my company and help them to grow and help them to be successful, then their children could possibly receive a better education as well, because they can then move to a better school district that could help them to be successful and to grow and to be encouraging and that type of thing.
It's that ripple effect, right?
It's the ripple effect,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You've already kind of spoken to some of the ways we all benefit from, you know, ensuring healthy levels of diversity across the Indian supply chain. So let's talk about some of the things. So clearly on the front of the interview, you talked about how you're mentoring young girls in Texas, especially from a STEM perspective. And I imagine kind of taking a page out of your parents' playbook, sharing and engaging them on some of the things they just don't know what they don't know, like all of us. We all don't know what we don't know. So when you're planting those seeds of awareness and you're being that natural encourager that you are, I can only imagine the ripple effect you're leading. So tell us more about your approach to mentoring.
So my approach to mentoring is, it's twofold. I like to make myself available to young girls in different ways. So you have your K through 5 mm-hmm. set of girls, right? And their interaction is going to be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So my approach to that set is fun, making science play, you know, or making it something that they can relate to that's fun. And then my middle school girls, you have to stay in touch with what's important to that age group in this day and this time. So currently, what's important that I found to that age group, which will be surprising, is a lot like boys in that they like video games too. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so they like video games, they like fashion, and so you can make it science important to them by making yourself available with the fashion piece, because you can start to introduce them to things like nylon. You can start to introduce them to different types of fabrics and colors and pigments and different things like that. That's all science. That's all STEM.
Absolutely.
And then my high school girls, which are near and dear to my heart, I spend most of my time with them. I like to make myself available to them and mentor them in the form of letting them shadow me. So bringing them on site, showing them what it looks like to work in manufacturing, making it real and relevant for
them.
And letting them know, hey, look, this is a fun job for me. I don't just come to work, and you may think of manufacturing as shift work and, you know, something boring. And no, I have a different day every day. No 2 days are the same, and it is a blast, let me tell you. Matter of fact, let me show you, right. You know. And so I let them come and hang out with me for a couple of days, maybe even a week in the summer when they're off. And that's my approach to mentoring. It's more hands-on. It's more speaking to where they are at that time.
For those of us, give us some advice. How can we help? You know, what can professionals do to not just help with the gender gap, but help with the diversity gap? You know, what would your advice be?
So how can you guys help? I have two things that come to mind, and that is pipeline development and role modeling. Let's talk about pipeline development for a second. So when I think of the pipeline, I think of it as a funnel, with the biggest part of the funnel being your K through 12 set of girls, or just people in general. But the biggest part is going to be the those that are in school, that are in grade school. And then as you start to go into college, when people start making decisions, the funnel starts to get more and more narrow. And then especially when you get out of college age into the working class, then you have a small amount of people that you can pull from for your pipeline. The problem that I've seen that we have as working professionals of today is that we try to hire for the job when the job becomes available. The way to do it, and the way that we all can make this better for us, is if we start to build that pipeline well before the job becomes open. And what that means is talk to the kindergartner, talk to the fifth grader, open their eyes to the different types of options and availability of jobs that are out there. Because quite frankly, when I go to these elementary schools, they want what they see. And what they see is Beyonce. What they see is, you know, someone who is in a very visible, like a movie type role, or, you know, some type of something on TV, you know, and they think that's what I want to do. And while that's all fine and good, or sports, you know, that's the other thing that I get a lot. You know, I want to be, you know, a football player, or I want to be, you know, something like that. And like I said, while that's all fine and good, we need to let them know there are other jobs out there that are just as fun and that are just as rewarding. And so when I say think about how everyone can help, and that is to build a pipeline, help us before that job becomes available and you're sitting there with a resume in your hand. The second thing about building the pipeline is that we have to be careful how we write these job descriptions. So for women in particular, I've learned that you cannot write the job description how we have been trained to do so. These job descriptions need different words that appeal to a person to where they feel like, or they know that they will have purpose in that job. Okay. It just can't be a sterile, hey, this is a 9-to-5, come in, you know, I need you to operate this machine. No. You know, you need to create a purpose for that person if they feel that job, that way that they can connect to that purpose.
Fantastic.
And then the role modeling piece. I've spoken about this. How can we all help? How can we we need to do a better job at being role models for these kids. I know that we, get into just the hustle and bustle of life and the things that we have to take care of for ourselves and for our families, but we're also responsible for the next generation because after all, they will be taking care of us pretty soon.
Absolutely.
And so, we need to make sure that they're in the right mindset, that they're emotionally prepared, that they're, physically prepared. I mean, the food that that's a whole nother show, I'm sure, Scott. But I mean, we can go into, a lot of these things that have been detrimental to all of us as we grow and mature and age. But, that's where I am with this thing. How can we help? We can help by, filling the pipeline a lot sooner and being better role models.
Fantastic. Deliberate. Engage role models, a lot of what I heard you say there. All right, so shifting gears a little bit here. From a leadership standpoint, what advice would you have for young ladies that would differ from advice you'd give any and everyone?
This one is also very important to me, Scott. My advice to young ladies that are definitely entering into corporate America and that are entering into manufacturing in particular is to be aware of how you are perceived. And what I mean by that is come with some type of emotional intelligence. Corporate America already has some idea of what the woman is and how she delivers and how she contributes, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when you enter an industry, if you're extremely emotional, that can be misconstrued as a weakness. Mm. If you're quiet, then they may think, oh, she doesn't have an opinion, or she just is not knowledgeable about the subject. And so while I'm not trying to change anyone and make them different from who they are, what I do always suggest, always, 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 is to balance your natural state of being with how people are perceiving you. Hmm. And so when you think about this, the evidence is overwhelming, Scott, with the fact that women are over-mentored and under-sponsored. Mm. And what I mean by that is we as women, we are pretty good at finding a mentor, finding someone we can relate to, but we don't take it past that point. Mm. And what I mean by that is when you find a good mentor, and there are different types of mentors in life, you have this mentor at work that you can just kind of bounce ideas off of, mm-hmm. or you have that person who's already a fellow in your company who can give you scientific advice or whatever it is, whatever field that you have a job in. But you have that type of person as well. But you need to take these mentors and to deliver in the job that you're in so that you can have a sponsor. Now, I don't advise, different people advise different things, but I don't advise that you ask for a sponsor or you ask someone to be your sponsor. I advise that you deliver above and beyond in the current job that you're in so that a sponsor notices you and begins to sponsor you. And now let me define sponsor.
Sure.
So sponsor is going to be the person who speaks for you when you're not in the room. Sponsor is going to be the person who has enough influence and pull to create opportunities for you and help you to be successful in the company. And so that's the person who's going to fight for you. That's going to be the person who speaks on your behalf when you're in the room with the CEO or the president of your division or that type of thing. So that's how I define sponsor. Mm. And so that's what, my advice is to deliver and deliver well and deliver with excellence on a consistent basis using the mentors that are available to you so that then you obtain sponsorship.
Love that. Over-mentored and under-sponsored. We got to change that.
Absolutely.
But
got to change that.
And I like how you put onus not just on both the industry, but also the individual women, right? To basically mm-hmm. kind of step through the door and engage and take the ball and run with it. So I'm not sure where you find all the time. Maybe you don't sleep at night because I know you're involved in a lot of different, not beyond your full plate at work. You're involved in a lot of other initiatives. So I've heard about some of the awards you've received for your work in industry. So tell us one award that you maybe you're most proud of and what's the story behind it?
Oh, wow. I would say that my award that I'm most proud of is in 2017, I was named Hidden Figure of Dallas.
Wow.
Like the movie. Behind that, yes, like the movie, absolutely. And it was on the news, and it was in the newspapers, and it was announced the week after the movie was released. So it was by design that that our Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson and her team, as well as the National Society of Black Engineers, designed it that way, that we would find someone in the Dallas area who embodied and portrayed what a hidden figure is. And so the story behind it, you know, I crack myself up sometimes, but the story behind it is, I had heard that I was nominated, and, you know, as a mode of self-protection, you know, I kind of told my parents about it, and I'm like, but you know what? It's okay if I don't win. It's okay if I don't get it, because just to be nominated is great. And while on the inside, I'm like dying, like, oh my God, I'm really being considered for this. I really, really want it. But, you know, like I said, protection, right? I'm going to just say, I'm just happy to be nominated. But that, I would say that award, it was about 10 years in the making, because I had mentioned that one of my first projects as a scientist was to figure out what happened on the Columbia Space Shuttle accident. And it was a lot of work figuring out, and essentially, I developed coatings that go on the wafers, the silicon carbide wafers on the space shuttle outer parts, especially on the wings, because as upon reentry, the wings and the nose of the shuttle experience the most heat. And so we developed at Sandia National Labs ways to mimic these very, very high temperatures. And then I got in the lab and I just started developing different coatings. And we would try them out. I would watch those things burn and smoke over weeks. And I would have to go back to the drawing board. But I would tell you, when I presented this work at a PacRim conference in Hawaii, and some of the NASA employees that were there, the response after we finally came up with a set of coatings that worked, oh my goodness, it was a thunderous applause in the room.
I bet.
Some people were crying. And my boss had to explain to me at the time, he said, look, Sherika, these people have lost coworkers, they've lost friends, they've lost family, and this is a sign of hope that we could actually prevent this from happening again.
Wow.
And so fast forward 10 years, and you have a team of congresspeople who are looking for someone to say, hey, look, you know, this is a hidden figure. And they found me.
Wow. That is, man.
And when they called and said, hey, you're it, I literally just burst into tears. And my husband was like, I knew it. I knew they were going to pick you. I knew it. And I'm like, how did you know?
Well, you know.
Yeah, how did you know?
it is, first off, I didn't know that. That was not, I'm going to have to check on our research team, because that was not in my notes. That is a huge honor. 2017 Hidden Figure of Dallas. And
correct.
My wife and I have always loved that movie. I'm not sure when, I guess the movie came out in 2017, I guess. Loved the movie.
Yes, it did.
It's such a great and powerful story. And to talk with someone that, you know, is fighting through, even though times have changed, some of the challenges and difficulties, I'm assuming because it's above my pay grade. I am not a PhD. But I'm sure some of those challenges still exist, and to be recognized for your work on that level, on that stage, that has got to be incredibly rewarding.
That's the one that I'm most proud of.
I would
most
be too. I would be too. And you know what? The best part about it is that you are driving that ripple effect so that other folks 20 or 30 years down the road will be in position to receive that same, not only receiving recognition is great, but more importantly, they'll be in position to drive change and to drive innovation and to give back like you are.
Absolutely. I joke with my girls here in McKinney a lot, my high school girls. I joke with them a lot, but I'm kind of serious when I tell them, hey, look, guys, Dr. Sanders is getting old. It's time for y'all to take the wheel. It is time for you to take the wheel. You know, you can do this. You can do this.
Love it. So, quick question. Are you open to keynoting? and speaking at different conferences and stuff. I'd love to have you in Atlanta at some point soon. All right. So how can folks, first two-pronged question here. How can folks, number one, learn more about Manor Polymers, but also how can folks, you know, plug in more with you and what you're doing?
Okay. So for Manor Polymers, you can definitely find us on the web, www.manorpolymers.com. We also have a Facebook page. And that's the Manor Polymers Facebook page, and it's M-A-N-N-E-R, M-A-N-N-E-R Polymers, .com. And then if you want to plug in with me or if you have questions about Manor, definitely feel free to give me a shout. My email is ssanders@manorpolymers.com, and I'll either point you in the right direction of the person that you need to talk to if I can't help myself, or if you want to get involved in any of the community involvements that I have, definitely send me a shout out on my email and I'll get you plugged in.
Fantastic. What a great story, great interview. I'm so glad that our great friend Allison got us connected. You've got a story I think many more folks need to hear about. And Sherika Sanders, PhD, Senior Technical Engineer at Manor Polymers, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You bet.
So to our listeners, hopefully you enjoyed this conversation as much as I have. If you enjoy conversations like this, be sure to find us and subscribe at Supply Chain Now, wherever you get your podcast from. You can also find us at supplychainnow.com. We'll wrap this up with the same challenge that we challenge our team with every single day. Hey, do good, give forward, and be the change that's needed. And on that note, we'll see you next time here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.